and get started. Did everyone get a handout? Yeah, okay, great. And also the sign-up sheet is going around, so you guys could just sign up there. That would be great. It's for academic success. Great. Well, I'd like to welcome you all this afternoon to the third installment of the Writing Colloquia. Today I will be presenting on the art of paragraphing, sort of advice for ordering and focusing your paragraphs, and really for ordering the whole cosmos. Of your paper, that is, not the whole cosmos, of the whole cosmos. So 2 weeks ago, when this colloquia first began, Dr. Kreider presented us with something of an overview of the art of rhetoric. Some of you were here, some of you maybe weren't. But he discussed rhetoric, its definition, and sort of the three sub-arts. And I just put them up there on the board as kind of a reminder, a brief introduction. So we have rhetoric is the faculty of discovering available means of persuasion. And there's sort of three sub-arts involved in rhetoric: invention, organization, and style. Now, Dr. Kreider focused on invention. He focused on your thesis and the focus of your thesis. Last week, Dr. Waterman Ward talked about parallelism and parallel structure in your sentences. So she was really focused on style. Today, I'm going to be discussing paragraphs, and that's really focused on organization, right? So what order you put things in. Now, I know the title of my talk, right, Ordering the Cosmos, is somewhat grandiose, but I actually think it's really ultimately appropriate because I think that the act of writing, it is an act of creation, right? You are creating something that previously did not exist, or, right, it only existed in your own mind. So you're giving shape to your thought. You are, in a sense, incarnating, right, that which only existed previously in your intellect. And I think that creation has a kind of wholeness and a fullness to it, right? It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. I think it's something like a small cosmos or a small world that you are giving shape to. And you're actually, and then kind of inviting your reader to walk through that cosmos, through that world with you for a little bit, sort of living in the same space for a while. You are your reader's guide through that cosmos too. Right? You are leading them. But you don't want your reader to get lost. And that's why organization is so, so important. Because it helps the reader know where they are. Right? If you don't have a good organization, your reader is completely lost and confused and sort of wandering around and in this world where there are sort of moments, glimpses of light, you sort of run after and run to them. You're like, here is clarity and sense. But a lot of times those moments are lost in this kind of fog or darkness, right? So you want to have order so your reader can see sort of the fullness of your argument, the full strength and beauty of it. Because you guys have good arguments, I think, and good thoughts and good interpretations of these great texts that we're reading, but sometimes your organization, right, the order in which you put those thoughts actually is really doing great damage to those thoughts themselves. Okay. Now, your thesis, right, your argument as a whole is going to determine kind of the extent of your cosmos, the extent of your world, right, how detailed or how general, right, how long or how short it's going to be. So, if you're writing a two-page paper, right, your thesis is going to be very narrow and very focused, so the extent of the world you're creating is going to be fairly small. Now, if you're writing a dissertation or a book, right, then your cosmos is going to be much, much bigger. Your argument is going to have more parts. It's going to be more complex. So your invention, right, is going to determine kind of the reaches of your world. But your organization is going to determine where things go. Where do you put the things that are involved in your argument? So today, I'm going to be focusing on body paragraphs on the middle. Right? Every work, as Aristotle says, has a beginning, a middle, and an end. I know that may not sound all that profound to you, or maybe sounds incredibly obvious, but it was actually really, really important. Right? Your work must have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Now, since one of our speakers in a few weeks will be talking about introductions and conclusions, So he'll be discussing the beginning and the end. I'm going to be today focusing on the middle, on the body of your essay. This is, you know, where the real meat of your argument comes in, is in the body. Now, as you can see from our definition of rhetoric, right, the faculty of discovering the possible means of persuasion. Rhetoric is a faculty, not a formula. This is something that Dr. Kreider talked about in the very first week. Right? So what that means is that when we're talking about the organization of your paragraphs, the organization of the body, there's no one right formula for organizing those paragraphs. Right? So that's not what I'm doing here. I'm not going to be giving you guys, right, one formula to fit all circumstances. It's impossible. It's not how the art of writing and the art of rhetoric work. You want your organization to be determined by your invention and by your argument. So what you're trying to argue will determine what, in what order, those main points come. Sometimes it may be good to start out with your strongest point, your strongest argument, your strongest claim. But let's say you're disagreeing with your professor, right? Rather dramatically. Maybe at the very beginning, but you want to set forth the best point that you possibly have because you want to win them over instantly. Right? Because you know that they're a very highly critical audience, and if you don't get them from the beginning, you're not going to get them at the end. So you have to start out strong. Maybe you want actually a crescendo effect. So you kind of want to build slowly, carefully, deliberately to your best point. So you want to start out with not bad points, but maybe they're not quite as strong, not quite as persuasive, but you build to the greatest point. Maybe you have to start out with some minor subpoint in order to prove a major point, or maybe you have to start out with a major point and then make some sort of subpoint after making your major point. Sometimes you have to start out by defining the main terms of your argument. So you have a paragraph that really is just definitions. Other times, though, you might want to actually build inductively to your definition. So you could have paragraphs that are examples, maybe three examples, four examples, and then end with, and then this is the definition, right, that I have discovered in light of looking at all these examples. Right? So there are many, many, many different ways of organizing, right, organizing the body paragraphs in your paper. So we're not going to begin giving you one perfect and ideal organization. The idea is you sort of learn what is most appropriate for the argument that you're making and the situation you're in. Right. Now, before we kind of jump into talking about ordering paragraphs and the nitty-gritty details of it, I want to define one. So I'm choosing, in the organization of my talk, to begin with definitions. So to begin with defining a paragraph. Now, can anyone kind of give me a definition of a paragraph? What do you guys think? What is a paragraph? What does it do?
A paragraph is a body of words, which is specifically set apart from the rest of the work and covers one specific point or topic.
Okay. That's a good definition. I would slightly tweak it by saying that a paragraph is a series of sentences. You're right, of course. It is made up of words, but I want you to also think of it as, right, the sentences and sentences in relationship to each other. So good. A paragraph, I would say, is a series of sentences that give focused and complete expression to one argument, theme, or idea. I'm going to say that again. Right, a paragraph is a series of sentences that give focused and complete expression to an argument, theme, or idea. Now note, I didn't say how many sentences you need. Right? That can vary greatly. You can have incredibly short paragraphs. You can sometimes have a three-sentence paragraph. You can sometimes have a really, really long paragraph that can go on for two pages. Right? The length of the paragraphs can vary. Right? But there are always, right, series of sentences that have focus and completion. Okay. Now you want order, right, within the paragraphs themselves and then between the different paragraphs that you have in your body. So So I've actually put three questions on the board that you should ask about each body paragraph that you ever write. You should always know the answer to these questions yourself. Even if, for some reason, you want it to be mysterious to the reader, if you have a rhetorical purpose for being mysterious, there are situations in which it is appropriate, but not many. But even in those situations, right, you always want to have a clear answer to these questions. Okay? Those three questions, as you can see, is what is the main focus of this paragraph? Right. Is the paragraph complete? And then how does this paragraph relate to my other paragraphs? Now I've put next to those questions the parts of the paragraph that will best help you answer those questions. So for example, with your first question, right, what is the main focus? Well, this is really easy to establish in your topic sentence, which is something of the thesis of your paragraph. This is sort of main idea of my paragraph. I'm putting it up there. It's very helpful to put it at the beginning of the paragraph, I'd say, rather than at the end, which a lot of times is what happens in student essays where you guys like wait until the end to give the reader the main idea. Or maybe it's, and I think this is more the case, it's you're writing the paragraph and about halfway through, three quarters of the way through the paragraph, you realize, oh, this is what I'm actually saying. And then the last two sentences of the paragraph are like fantastic. They're so good. And the reader's like, wow, I understand the point of this paragraph. Right. That's fantastic. That's great. However, right, if you take what you have at the end and put it at the beginning, the reader knows early on, oh, okay, this is what this paragraph is doing here. I feel much more relaxed and confident, right? And at ease. Right? When I don't know why something is there, when I feel lost, it's very stressful. For your reader, it's distressing them, and you don't want to distress your reader. So put your topic sentence at the beginning, for now. As you become better writers, I think you can play around with this more. And I say, topic sentences are really, they're hard. It takes a lot of work from you as the writer, but it's really wonderful for the reader. This is something that we all struggle with. I just met with my dissertation advisor at the beginning of this semester, and she literally told me, you need to work on your topic sentences in your paragraphs, right? I'm writing my dissertation at this point. I was like, surely I would have mastered the art of topic sentences by this point. Right? Not quite. It's a difficult art to master, but it's such a kindness and such charity to your reader. Because again, you're guiding them through the cosmos. And the topic sentence is helping them stay on track, stay focused, understanding where we're going. It helps, of course, right, to establish the focus. So let's say, right, you have a paragraph. You're reading a paragraph, going along. This paragraph is about the excellence of Achilles. Maybe his excellence, his musical excellence. So you're talking about, right, book 9, when Achilles is sitting out on the beach playing his lyre. And you're looking at that scene closely, talking about, right, why is it important that Achilles is sitting out on the beach playing his lyre? And then all of a sudden, you unexpectedly and abruptly shift to talking about Achilles' excellence as a speaker. Your reader's like, how did we get here? How on earth did we get from playing a lyre to speaking? I wasn't prepared for it. Took me completely off guard. Now I'm grumpy because I feel lost. We very easily rectify that situation by using a really good topic sentence that it sets the reader up for the expectation that you're going to be talking about two things. You could have a topic sentence that said, right, although Achilles shows his excellence primarily through martial deeds, he also demonstrates excellence in the gifts of the muses, in music and speech. Right? So right there, from the beginning, I'm telling the reader, okay, two things. We'll be talking about music and speech. The reader knows, they go along, and so when you switch in the middle of the paragraph, they're prepared for it, and they understand that it all comes under the aspect of excellence in the arts of the muses. So you're giving the reader clear categories. Right. You also want to try and echo the language of your thesis in your topic sentences. Right. So if my thesis, hopefully, for that topic sentence I just gave you, right, was something about the excellence of Achilles, then it's a good topic sentence because I'm repeating that language again. Sort of reminding the reader, yes, this is what I'm arguing, this is what I'm arguing, this is what I'm arguing. I'm not hitting them over the head, but you just this sort of gentle reminder because sometimes readers are inattentive and forgetful, and we get distracted, and we get hungry. And we're like, what is going on here? So you remind them, bring them back to the main point. Okay. The next question, right, is the paragraph complete? Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this question because in a couple of weeks from now, Sir Foreman will be discussing the use and abuse of evidence in this series, so I don't want to step on his toes. I'll just say that this is sort of part of having a complete and full paragraph, is choosing good evidence and explaining it thoroughly. Right, to make sure that you have a clear topic sentence, your evidence, supporting the claim that you're making in that sentence, and then you're explaining that evidence clearly to the reader. And that that explanation must be full enough so that the reader understands that they're supposed to read the evidence, or that so that they understand that they read the evidence the same way that you read it. That's ultimately what you're trying to do. And then the third, and this is actually where I want to spend most of our time today, is on transitions. Right, so the third question is, how does this paragraph relate to my other paragraphs? So right, when you're creating this world, you're not just kind of like throwing things into it randomly. It's not like one point and another point and another point. Oh, how interesting all that was. I'll stick a conclusion there, throw in an introduction, something broad and big, bam. You're done, right? No, you're creating a unified argument, right, that has a logical connection. You're actually ordering your cosmos through principle of logos, the principle of reason. And that principle becomes clear in your transitions. So transitions are really important. This is actually where the real thinking of your argument becomes apparent to your reader. Right, where they really see, okay, there's actual thought here. These are logical steps that we are taking. This person is thinking about cause and effect. Right? One thing causes another thing. This person is thinking about comparison and contrast. Right? One thing being like something else, or one thing being different, those things. Or this person is trying to define one great term. And they're doing so, right, we talked about, right, but looking at different examples. Right, but it's in those moments of transition that your reader sort of begins to see, not begins, it really should be in your thesis where they begin to see, right, but it's in your transitions, right, that really carry the argument all the way through. So they're incredibly, incredibly important. So imagine with me again, you're reading an essay, and this essay is about Hephaestus' role in resolving the conflict between Zeus and Hera at the end of book one of the Iliad. Okay? So you have a lovely paragraph talking about what Hephaestus does in order to make peace between Hera and Zeus, right, that exemplary couple of marriage. Right? You know, Hephaestus reminds them of the importance of the feast. This is something that ought not to be interrupted. He talks to Hera about the fact that Zeus is very powerful and strong and can clearly, right, basically beat you up, so you should listen. All right, there's various ways in which to bring about peace. We don't really have time to go into it all now. That's one paragraph. The very next paragraph, then, all of a sudden, right, you're talking about the hypocrisy of the gods. Again, your reader's completely lost. What do Hephaestus and hypocrisy have to do with each other? If you haven't transitioned, right, if you haven't moved your reader from, the quarrel between Zeus and Hera to hypocrisy of the gods, your reader has no idea why Hephaestus and hypocrisy, right, even belong in the same cosmos. Right? It feels like sort of two different worlds clashing together. And you're striving for one ordered, principled world. So I put some tips for transitions up on the board here. Just sort of tricks of the trade, things that are really, really, really useful and handy for your reader. And they're so easy to use in some sense. They're easy to remember. But sometimes transitional words can get a little bit tricky. So we'll talk about this. first. So use transitional words, right? So when you're moving from one paragraph to the next, and I'm imagining transitions at the beginning of paragraphs, I should say, and that is often the best place for them. Right, so you sort of start out strong, introducing, moving from the very last paragraph to this new paragraph, and then introducing the new idea in this paragraph. So combine transitions and topic sentences. So you're moving from one paragraph to the next. Words like, right, since, although, because, so, if, however, also, thus, therefore. And that is by no means an exhaustive list. I wasn't even trying to be exhaustive. Right? There are so many other words that you can use as transitional words. In addition to, in light of, in contrast, right? Moreover, nevertheless, nonetheless, right? All kinds of words you can employ. But be careful to remember that those words have a meaning. Right? So it's not like this like nice grab bag of words. You could just sort of go in, all right, pick one out, and I'm going to stick it in my paper. Right? Those words actually have a, but they establish logical connections between things. Right? So if you use however, right, however is an adversative. Right? So it goes in the opposite direction, the thing that you've just said. So don't use however as also. Right, also is a, and in the same vein, in the same light, another point kind of along the path. However, right, is running in the opposite direction. Right, so don't use however as also. For whatever reason, that is one that actually is frequently abused. I'm not quite sure, but however gets beat up on a lot. So be careful with those words, right, that you choose the one that actually clearly establishes the logical connection that you're trying to make. Right, if you pick something like a therefore, right, that indicates, all right, this is a conclusion from premises. Right, I've just said this is true and this is true, and so therefore this final thing is true. Okay. So there again, there is establishing logical connections. They're not random fancy words you just kind of throw in. Right? You use them carefully. The second tip I have there is using pronouns, using demonstrative pronouns. This is words like this, that, those, these, and such. All right? So this is great. If you imagine how, again, you have your two paragraphs, you have a last paragraph that was really, or sorry, the last sentence in the first paragraph was a great sentence. You were talking about, again, about maybe about excellence, something like that. You move to your next paragraph. You can transition by saying something like, right, such excellence, however, right, is not, right, the final good for human beings. Your previous paragraph maybe was arguing, you know, that we see excellence as being one of the great goods in Homer. You want to say, such excellence, though, is not actually the highest of the goods. So words like such, this, that, and those, they just sort of, they're road signs pointing the reader back to what's come before so that we connect it immediately and instinctively too. It's just the purpose of those words is to do that. That's how they function. So if you use them, right, the reader knows to go back to what came before, right, and read what that the current sentence in light of what's come past or what has just passed. So those are incredibly, incredibly helpful in transitioning from one point to the next. And then the third and final tip, again, these tips, of course, are by no means exhaustive either. There are so many ways to transition. So I'm just sort of giving you a few tricks of the trade. Final one being polypteton. Okay. So that's a fancy schmancy term. Really what it means, right, it's a rhetorical trope. Actually rhetorical scheme, to be precise here, a rhetorical scheme in which you repeat words that have the same root. Essentially, right, you're repeating the same word in different grammatical forms. So my example was fierce and fierceness. Great. So what part of speech is fierce? What is it?
Adjective,
great, okay. And then fierceness is? Noun. Very good, yep. So I have an adjective and I have a noun. Right? The fact that repetition, I'm repeating those two things, and automatically, the reader's automatically going to make the connection between the two of them. So, let's say that I have a paragraph talking about the fierceness of Achilles. Achilles is still so fierce, blah, blah, blah. Here's how he's fierce, here's my evidence, here's my analysis showing that he's fierce. Last sentence, you know, something like that. Wow, look how fierce Achilles is. I mean, that's a really bad sentence, but something like that. Transition, I could say, such, I'm gonna be actually using two transitional techniques in one. Such fierceness, however, actually that's three. So such fierceness, however, right, is mitigated by the tenderness that Achilles frequently shows throughout the Iliad. Okay. So there, I'm actually using all three transitional techniques there. But you know, I was using Polypteton as a way of moving the reader right, from one point to the next. Polypteton is actually really great, fantastic, even for transitioning like between sentences too, within your paragraphs. It's really, just a really handy technique. Right, it's a way to repeat yourself without being overly repetitive, because you're not using the exact same word. You're using it in a different grammatical form. As you can see, right, repetition is incredibly important in your transitions too. Yeah, Kelly.
So you can use it through different sentences, it doesn't have to be in the same
one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, right. You can use it at the end of one paragraph or at the beginning of the next, or even within different sentences in your own paragraphs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, great question. Okay, so now I want to look at the handout that I've given you guys here very quickly. Okay, we're just sort of talk about the different transitions. And now remember I told you that your topic sentence should echo the language of your thesis? And your transitions should too. And actually, so basically, you should be able to, and your reader really, should be able to look at your topic sentences and your transitions and have a very clear idea of what your paper is saying, of what you're arguing, what your main points are, what each paragraph is going to be about. So hopefully I have succeeded in doing that with this handout. I have not actually written this paper at all, but I have given you a thesis. And I've given you right, topic sentence transitions for my main body paragraphs. So you'll hopefully have some idea of what I'm trying to say. Okay, so my thesis. Though Homer makes the wrath of Achilles the main theme of his poem, wrath is not the only or even the most important motivation for the greatest of the Achaeans. Rather, friendship motivates this wrathful warrior. I'm not particularly thrilled with this thesis. I think it's too general. I would like to be somehow a little bit more specific. And I think that would come if I actually wrote this paper. If I actually filled in all of the paragraphs that I was trying, that I've set forth in this kind of rough outline, I think the thesis would improve. But, oh well, there's the thesis. Okay. So, from that thesis, what do you think are going to be the main terms, the main words in my paper that are going to be really important? Friendship, okay, very good. Friendship is going to be really, really important. Yeah.
Motivation.
That's a good one too, yeah, motivation, very good. Yeah.
Wrath,
good, very good. Okay, that's excellent. Yeah, so wrath, motivation, and friendship, sort of the key terms. Okay, so let's look at my first paragraph. So before discussing particular examples of friendship, then we must consider how Homer defines friendship. So I chose to start out again by defining my terms. Maybe that's not the best choice in this case. We can actually, hopefully we'll have a little time maybe to talk about like how I could change the order of this paper, maybe what would be better, what would maybe make more sense to you guys. But I decided to start out with a definition. A lot of that is just, that's how I think, too. I need to have a definition somewhat clearly established before that I can actually look at particular instances. That's just how my brain works, so that's why I decided to put it there. Okay, so here you can see I'm echoing one of the major terms. I'm echoing friendship here in this topic sentence. But it's also something of a transition because it's moving from my thesis to actually the later paragraphs with the phrase, right, before discussing particular examples of friendship. So I'm preparing the reader that I'm going to talk about specific examples, but I'm also telling them I'm going to be doing something else before that. So I'm giving them a sense of my organization. I'm letting them know this is the order in which I'm doing things. Again, that's just so, so helpful for your reader. All right, so then my second paragraph would be Homeric friendship. Love, based on mutual admiration for the excellence of another, has great power over Achilles. In Book 9, we see this power when Aeneas' appeal to friendship, not Odysseus or Phoenix's appeal to material possessions, convinces the king of the Myrmidons to stay in Troy. Okay, so how am I transitioning here? What am I doing? Good, yeah, I'm actually literally just including the definition in that sentence. So presumably, I spent the whole previous paragraph defining friendship. I had, you know, I had evidence, I had analysis, I had lots of sentences, they were beautiful, they were great. That was a fantastic and fabulous definition of friendship. In my transition, I just sort of very, very briefly, concisely summarize the whole definition and then move on. And so what is this paragraph going to be about?
Is there one specific example of this friendship?
Good. And which specific example?
In Book 9, Do You Appeal by Ajax?
Very good. Okay, very good. Yeah, so I'm clearly telling you, I'm going to be looking at Book 9, I'm going to be looking at Ajax, I'm going to be looking at this specific example, right? You know what's coming. You know that the quotations that I'm going to have, I mean, who am I going to be quoting?
Ajax or
Achilles. Yeah, exactly right. Ajax or Achilles. That's going to be my evidence. So I'm setting forth from the beginning, you know, where I'm going. Okay. So then my next paragraph. I say, though Aeneas' appeal to friendship persuades Achilles to stay in Troy, this general appeal is not enough to inspire him to rejoin the battle. The particular death of Patroclus, his dearest friend, finally convinces him to once more take up arms. Okay. Again, how am I transitioning here? What am I using? Ideas?
Transitional word.
Okay, yeah, what transitional word?
Though.
Though. Okay, very good. Though. Which is basically, of course, although. Okay. So, although is something of an adversative transition, right? It's sort of going along, and then although. So I'm establishing that kind of logical connection between those points. But I'm saying, although A.S. was somewhat persuasive, right? It was, in fact, actually Patroclus' death that was ultimately the most persuasive thing in convincing Achilles to stay. It was the loss of friendship, rather than the appeal to friendship, that finally worked. Right. And again, what is this paragraph going to be about? Emma? There you go, exactly. Death of Patroclus, how it affected Achilles. See, man, you guys, I don't even have to write this. Like, you just know, right? No, I do, because of course, right, this is not ultimately persuasive. I don't actually have any evidence, right? None whatsoever. You need that evidence to be persuasive and convincing. This, at least, though, is setting forth the order, so you know where I'm going. All right, now, paragraph 4. I have, of course, Achilles at times appears to disdain that very friendship that so moves him. After all, he asks Zeus to punish the Achaeans back to their ships. I'm sorry, to push the Achaeans back to their ships. A request he must know will result in the death of men once considered friends. Okay. So how am I transitioning in this paragraph? What am I doing? What do I use? Jared?
You referenced the friendship that you talked about in the previous paragraph.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm repeating myself. Repetition.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Transitional words. Of course, after all.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I was like, of course, after all. I'm making the concession here that Yes, yes, we're right, Achilles is moved by friendship. But of course, right, at other times he just seemed to be moved to disdain that very friendship. And then after all, this is further explanation of what I've just said, right? After all, he does this, and I specify that. Okay. I'm also using pronoun, right, to disdain that very friendship. Okay. The very friendship or that I was literally just talking about in those previous paragraphs. So that friendship, right, the friendship that he has with Aeas, with the other Achaeans, he's despising that friendship. How could he do that? How could he despise them? Now, so this paragraph is actually, this is something of a counter-argument to my main claim, that Achilles is so deeply moved by friendship, right? This is the potential objection, right? You could say, right, but doesn't he want basically all the Achaeans to die so that he can be glorified and honored? Like, how is that friendship? How is he concerned with friendship in any particular way at all? That's a pretty major counter-argument or objection to my claim. So I really have to address that. I really have to deal with that. So I decided to do it after I talked about, after I had established Achilles as being a good friend. And again, maybe we could talk about, yeah, maybe that's not the best place to put that. Maybe I should put my counter-objection somewhere else. Maybe I should put it earlier. Maybe I should put it later. But I decided to put it right there. Okay? And then my final paragraph. Because of this early failure in friendship, Achilles, in addition to suffering the loss of his dearest friend Patroclus, must also learn to extend friendship to his enemy as he does in book 24 with Priam. Okay. So again, how am I transitioning here? What am I doing?
Transitional word because.
Okay, I'm using because there, so I'm establishing cause and effect. I'm saying, right, this thing that happened before led to this other thing. Right? It was the cause of it. Yeah. Don't neglect the word because, guys, in your papers. It's a really huge word. Now, this establishing cause and effect is one of the first steps in creating logical order in your arguments and logical orders in your papers. So don't neglect because. Think about because. Think about how one thing causes another thing. Good. I'm also, again, using a pronoun, right? This early failure in friendship. So there I'm specifying the failure in friendship, referring to paragraph 4 before it, about his failure, right, when he wishes that the Achaeans would be pushed back to the ships. So I'm specifying which failure. And then I'm saying, in addition to suffering Patroclus. So I'm bringing in also the death of Patroclus, too. So I'm folding actually several of the paragraphs into this one transition. And then moving into my final point. And again, so what's this paragraph going to be about? What's going to be the focus of the paragraph?
Priam.
Yep, exactly. Priam and Achilles, specifically, right? Their relationship with each other, what they say to each other, what Achilles does, shows how he acts towards Priam. That will be the focus. Okay. You can see, hopefully, that you get a sense of what my whole paper is going to be about, right, and where I'm going to go with it from just looking at my topic sentences and my transitions and my thesis. Right? Because I'm using all of those transitional words, pronouns. I don't actually use really polypteton in this case, but you definitely could. Or then I'm also echoing the language of my thesis again and again and again. So maybe we can talk briefly about other ways to organize this, maybe better ways. Like, do you guys think, is this a good way to organize this paper? Does it work? Should I do something differently? Or is it perfect? I mean, I'd love to hear that. Oh, I'm not actually writing this paper, so yes.
I guess it might be good to add maybe just the whole entire paragraph, actually. It could be after the definition of friendship, or maybe even before, talking about the wrath of Achilles and how he does have wrath, but it's not the main motive. Because we see this good. So much in the thesis, but it's not really mentioned at all in the body.
That's very good. Thank you. And actually, our early discussion about the main terms in my thesis, we pointed out that wrath and motivation was very helpful, because I hadn't really been thinking about discussing wrath all that much, so I think you're right. It'd be great. I mean, one possible way is where I could actually talk, I could start out with wrath in my intro. I could say, right, look, you know, we begin with Sing Goddess, Wrath of Achilles. Or the son of Peleus, actually. Establishing that wrath in the beginning, look, wrath, 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 he's so wrathful. And then I go, however, although, or but, well, some adversative transitional word, that is not the whole story. You must also remember that Achilles, right, is moved by friendship. That might be an effective way to begin. That's a great suggestion. Yeah.
You never really present a paragraph in response to answer the objection you raised in paragraph 4 either. In paragraph 5, when you do say you present consequences of Achilles' decision, but you don't answer the objection that wrath is the most powerful motivation of Achilles. You never refute the objection that wrath is the most powerful motivation.
Mm-hmm. Good, right, yes, no, I don't. So, maybe that's something I should also do in the intro. Maybe I should back away from it and say, I'm not trying to say that wrath isn't the most powerful motivation. Maybe what I'm actually trying to argue is simply, right, that Achilles is also profoundly and deeply motivated by friendship. And then if we only focus on wrath, we miss who Achilles is. So maybe that's a question of refining my thesis and making it more accurate and more specific. More truthful, really. Good. Okay. What about my first paragraph? Like my definitions? Does that work there? Could I put it somewhere else? Where should I or where could I define friendship? Well, could I put that at the end? Would that make any sense?
I like it at the beginning.
Okay.
Or
you like it at the beginning.
Inside the intro, but if you put it after the paragraph on friendship, then we'll begin to lose confusion of the idea of friendship.
Okay. So at the beginning, yeah, it presents, I like that word, of cohesion. It kind of holds the paper together by being at the beginning. And that's sort of my natural inclination. However, I do think you can have a really effective paper that builds to a definition. I mean, actually, I had a student on a paper that he turned in a couple weeks ago, who did basically that, who sort of built to the definition of what a hero is. So you can use that technique well. Right. How about the order of my body paragraphs? Does it make sense to do Aeus, Patroclus, and Priam? Could I do that in a different order? Guys are really nice. It's your opportunity to critique a professor. Yes.
I guess it'll depend on whether the drama between each person, like Achilles and Aeus, or Achilles and Patroclus.
Patroclus.
If you want a more dramatic like ending, you put the paragraph with Patroclus and Achilles at the end.
Okay, so if I wanted to sort of build emotionally to the end. Okay, good. Yeah.
No, I think it's a pretty good order because it puts it chronologically, which has helped the reader follow up a little bit. And you also have the cause and effect in there because we have Ajax who's he causes Achilles to stay, but it's not enough. And so, therefore, the death of Patroclus happened.
And I mean that was my principle, right, is this chronological and causation. That was my organizing principle. Sometimes, right, maybe you do want, though, the drama or emotion to be organizing principle. Sometimes imagery could be the organizing principle. If you sort of are tracing an image throughout and you want to talk about the way in which it changes or develops, right, maybe you need the image itself to be organizational, the organizational principle, not, right, chronology. Image. Yeah, I guess.
It seems in light of your thesis that paragraph 5 is, as it is now, is somewhat superfluous. Perhaps there's some points in there that can be refined. But paragraph 5 doesn't really demonstrate how Achilles is motivated by friendship, but rather it demonstrates that Achilles must learn to show friendship.
Good. That's a good observation. And I'll sort of maybe conclude with this, right, is what I was imagining that paragraph to be is in some sense the answer to the counter-objection, or to the counter-argument. So I would deal with this fact that we concede that, yes, Achilles does actually seem to wish death on his friends. There seems to be this failure in friendship. And then I'd move to paragraph 5, right, and say, okay, so then because of this failure in friendship, we see at the end where this restoration of Priam. So maybe paragraph 5 would be better as a conclusion. So I'm responding to my objection they raised, and I'm concluding there, I'm ending, right, by presenting the reader with this beautiful image of friendship, right, and saying, wow, look at this, like, this is what Homer leaves us with. Well, and of course, I mean, the burial of Hector and the women lamenting, but he does also, right, leave us with, right, this image of these two enemies being brought together. Right, what's the significance of that? And reflect on that further in my conclusion. Well, thanks, guys. Those are really good suggestions. I'm kind of wishing I was going to write this paper, but I don't really have time. So, thanks.